This podcast is brought to you by WEDI, the preeminent national membership association for health IT guidance and collaboration. Recognized and trusted as a formal advisor to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, WEDI is the leading authority on the use of health IT to efficiently improve health information exchange, enhance care quality, and reduce cost. To learn more about WEDI member benefits and educational offerings, please visit our website, wedi.org. Welcome to the Collective Voice of Health IT, a WEDI podcast. Hey everybody, it's Mike McNutt, Director of Education and Events for WEDI. In January of this year, CMS released its interoperability and prior authorization final rule. This rule emphasizes the need to improve health information exchange to achieve appropriate necessary access to health records for patients, healthcare providers, and payers. This final rule also focuses on efforts to improve prior authorization processes through policies and technology to help ensure that patients remain at the center of their own care. After the rule dropped, WEDI launched an ambitious 7-part virtual education series available now on our YouTube page addressing key components of the rule led by a panel of healthcare IT experts. The series highlighted implementation thoughts and the benefits and challenges the industry must consider as it plans, develops, tests, and implements before the compliance date. Today, I'd like to welcome the moderators from the Interoperability and Prior Authorization series to offer their thoughts on the series. What were the key takeaways from the events? Their thoughts on industry preparedness and next steps for the industry and WEDI. It's my pleasure to introduce Robert Tennant, WEDI Vice President of Federal Affairs, Ferris Taylor, Executive Director of the Healthcare Executive Group, or HCEG, Denny Brennan, Executive Director of the Massachusetts Health Data Consortium. Gentlemen, welcome to the Collective Voice of Health IT.
Thank you, Michael.
Rob, I will start with you. Let's tell a little story about how this thing came to pass. So talk to us from a WEDI perspective about the development of these 7-part series.
Sure. It started back in December 2020 when the first proposed rule was released by the Trump administration. That was postponed and re-released by the Biden administration. And comment period ended about a year ago. And we waited patiently to see when the final rule would be released. And we have a very close working relationship with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So we had a good sense of when the final rule would be released. And we immediately began to plan for this series, understanding that this really was a seismic change in how healthcare entities would exchange data. So rather than just have a one and done, we decided to do a multi-part series to do a deep dive into the key components of the final rule and also be able to give a unique perspective by stakeholder group. And so we'll get into those a little bit later, but we took that opportunity to really educate the industry on this very important final rule.
And education and industry, we're in kind of the midst of what you have called in the past, we've done in the past, the SNP. So please go into a little bit of that, and then we'll, of course, talk about it later on. But this kind of idea that we're beginning this education of bringing all the stakeholders together to talk about implementation, talk about the benefits, the challenges, and the concerns.
Yeah, this goes back, if you can believe it, back into the early 2000s when CMS released the version 4010 of the transaction standards. WEDI developed what we call then the Strategic National Implementation Process, or SNIP. And the idea was to create work groups, develop surveys, put together education, and have a forum for the industry to come together to talk about challenges, to come up with solutions, and identify best practices. And so we did that for version 4010, for version 5010 of the transaction standards, and for ICD-10 diagnostic codes. And so when we saw this final rule, we thought perfect opportunity to reinvigorate our SNP process to help the industry implement this very complex final rule.
Yep, very complex and very ambitious series that we undertook. Ferris, before I get you and Denny into here to talk about moderators, you mentioned earlier that you had your concerns when you heard that WEDI was initially going to put together this ambitious 7-part series because you felt it was so early, but in the end, we proved you wrong, correct?
And yes, I was not involved, Rob, in 2020 when the discussions first started. But in fact, looking back now, my anxieties totally disappeared as we go through the various components of this final rule. There is not a single part of a health plan that's not going to be impacted. And my involvement has been primarily on the health plan side, but at the national level. And Rob, I appreciate your mention of the SNP process, that implementation word in the middle of all that. We all think we think strategically, and yeah, we have processes, but this is one where it's a three-year process. And yeah, we needed to start talking early, which we did 2 days after the final rule, and we need to be talking further in the future. So it was a surprise to, I think, a lot of healthcare stakeholders, the magnitude and the depth of the final rule. And I'm glad we started talking early.
Yep. And that series, by the way, you can visit it at Workgroup for Electronic Data Interchange on YouTube. We had a fantastic primer featuring Alex Muggy to start off with. And then we went right into the APIs. We went right to the payer-to-payer, patient access, provider access. Then we talked about prior authorization from multiple different perspectives, from the payer, provider, and patient side. And then we went EMR, vendors, early adopters. And then we closed out not too long ago with the small payers and small providers. I'm going to bring Denny on along with Ferris. You were moderators for several of these events. What were your takeaways in terms, you know, personally, what did you feel from not only our fantastic panelists, but also from the audience, from the questions they were asking? What did you see was the current climate, I guess, in healthcare when it came to the nearly 1,000 people that attended our event?
Yeah, I, Ferris, if you don't mind my interjecting, and then by all means, take it from here. There was a lot of excitement in the audience. There were a lot of questions. I can tell you as a moderator, we had a panel of more than a dozen people. We had, you know, a very large audience that was very engaged, and going between the comments and the questions and turning those around and asking them of the panel was a very exciting experience. You know, sometimes you have audiences who are kind of waiting and wondering, watching, you know, sort of trying to figure out whether or not they have a question, but that wasn't the case for these discussions. They were very engaged. I think the other experience or the other reaction I had was, you know, this takes a village. I mean, these regulations are sweeping in the sense that they involve regulators, they involve physician providers, they involve hospital providers, they involve health plans, they involve technology services companies. And Weedy brought together in these events, in this series, a really good cross-section. And I was able to ask questions of a panel that was highly diverse in terms of the expertise they brought to it, but every one of them had a stake in what was going to happen. And they were very excited. They were very engaged. And I found it, as a moderator, a very, you know, sort of informative experience. I learned from these folks because each of them brought their own perspective and they had something important to add, which tells you not only does this affect a lot of people, but it's going to be complicated. And everybody needs to get involved who has a stake in the successful outcome of it.
I agree, Denny. And it's interesting, in my 30 years of history in healthcare, most all discussions are very siloed. It's the payer group talking, or the provider group talking, or the technology companies coming up with solutions, or it kind of feels like the government is out there doing things without being connected. The general feel of this series, and each one of these sessions had, as you said, Michael, 150, 200 people involved, and it wasn't three or four people on the panel. It's the first time I've had a dozen people on a panel representing all of the stakeholders, starting out with CMS, the government perspective that was there, and then the technology perspective and the industry perspectives from the associations, AHIP and Blue Cross and other groups. And so it was a discussion on an issue that everybody knows is a critical problem. And it could be the prior authorization part of that, but you're not going to get prior authorization without this interoperability component, data liquidity among all of the stakeholders. And, you know, I had the unfortunate experience or the fortunate experience of doing the first one, which was the large payer API discussion, and then bookended that at the end with the small payers. And the difficulty in answering your question, Michael, is that those perspectives are very different. We had panelists that had been working on this final rule for 2 or 3 or 4 years, and we had panelists in the small payer that are just saying, you know, yeah, talk to me, tell me. I don't want to contribute. I'm just getting started. Mm-hmm. This is not something that anybody can ignore. Any stakeholder in healthcare has to get engaged with this because it's going to impact them. And it's not over. Yeah. It's a 3-year process. Nothing in healthcare lasts 3 years. It's going to change dramatically. Exactly. So the sense is excitement, but anxiety. You know, on the small provider, which I was just listening in as a participant, when you put up a flow chart of what this means for a provider, if you're not concerned and not working on it now for the next 3 years, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Time doesn't stand still. So what, 2027 seems like it's, you know, a million miles away, but it's really not. And you mentioned the diversity in the experience level. You mentioned we had one of the payers who said, oh, I shouldn't be on this panel. We haven't started. It's like, no, you actually have to be on this panel because you haven't started. And I think Denny mentioned it takes a village, and the diversity of the stakeholders that we had. We had payers, providers, vendors. We had so many different people. But then also, as I mentioned, the diversity in their starting points. You know, you had some folks who, like you said, have been in it forever, and others who haven't even started. So I think that was a very interesting kind of, not even a duality, more than that. You know, like, we had people at so many different parts of the spectrum. How important is it, and this is more kind of really a promotion of Weedy, how important is it to have that cross-section of the healthcare stakeholders present to not only talk about where they are or what they haven't even thought about, but also having the payers, having the providers, having the vendors, having the small payers, having the large payers, et cetera? How important is that in order to get, you know, this dream of SNP into a full-fledged reality and getting everyone involved and everyone moving in the same direction as we approach 2027? Feel free, anyone answer that one.
And I compliment that, Michael, with something that I think is just unique to Weedy. Compliments to you and to Rob and Charles and the entire Weedy organization. But very seldom in my history of dealing with issues in healthcare has the conversation included a listening ear as well as a directive ear of CMS and Health and Human Services, ONC. As I mentioned on that last panel, and we were down to the small payers, I was very surprised but very pleased. About halfway through in the chat, the CMS person said, oh, I have to get off right now. I apologize. We don't have these conversations with government leaders along with technology leaders and health plans and providers and associations and other organizations that really working together will solve these problems. This is an opportunity to move healthcare forward in a dramatic way. You stated it up front, Rob. This is a watershed ruling. It's a watershed event that's going to make a difference in healthcare going forward.
Yep. The one stakeholder I didn't mention was patients, and we actually did have patients' representatives involved. I'll ask Rob. Talk about the importance of having that very key stakeholder involved, the person that all of us are and the person that eventually we will should all benefit from this. How important is it to have the patient voice in this series?
Yeah, especially, you know, obviously the rule outlines requirements for patients to gain access to their own health information from not only their current health plan, but also their previous health plan. This is, again, a part of a change in thinking, I think, on the part of the federal government. And again, it's a bipartisan issue. This was something that the Trump administration brought up. It's been continued with the Biden administration. It's a movement towards making sure patients have full access to their information to help them make the best healthcare decisions they can. And so for us to have that viewpoint was critical. And again, I think just to emphasize what Farah said, having CMS there, not just listening, but also speaking, tells us that not only do they have a vested interest in making sure that there's a successful implementation of the rule, but that they're active participants in the implementation process. They don't want to just sit back and hope for the best. They want to be out there active, working with Weedy and the industry to make sure things go smoothly, because they know as well as we do, this is going to be a challenge. And so I think Denny said it best, it takes a village. It's going to take all the villages to work together to make this happen.
Definitely. We are speaking with Robert Tennant with Weedy, Denny Brennan with Massachusetts Health Data Consortium, and Ferris Taylor with HCEG, the Healthcare Executive Group on the Collective Voice of Health IT. Before I said that, someone was about to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to add to what Rob was saying, which is, you know, healthcare has grown in just the last 10 years with the introduction of the electronic health record and the federal subsidization for that as part of the High Tech Act. You know, healthcare has grown in complexity orders of magnitude with COVID, with the labor crisis we have in healthcare now, with the challenges facing the physician community and how they will work with patients going forward. We simply can't do healthcare the way we've been doing it historically. We have to get hundreds of millions of residents in this country engaged in the healthcare process if we expect to meet the level of healthcare quality, cost effectiveness, accessibility, equity that we all have as goals. So, you know, part and parcel of patient engagement or consumer engagement in this process is the very telling message that you're going to be part of the solution. You know, you may not think it now. You think this is just about having access to your information. But the reality is you're going to need to have technology that supports you in finding a provider, scheduling an appointment, getting to the best provider within your network to support what you need to do, and being a part of the healthcare process rather than a recipient of healthcare. And I think that's one of the big changes that CMS and HHS at the federal level saw, and a lot of people who were involved in healthcare on the ground see, which is if patients aren't engaged, informed, and involved in their healthcare, we simply can't get it done. You know, we simply can't help people who just show up expecting care to happen. It's just not going to work anymore. The industry is straining under the capacity demands, and having patients, consumers who are actively involved in their healthcare will enable them to make better decisions, use the resources that are available more wisely, knowing what they can and cannot afford, which is key, as well as who is considered higher quality or not, which is key. And building that kind of consumer data economy is central to, I think, what Weedy is involved in, which is, you know, bring consumers, patients, members to the table. Because not only do we want to hear what their perspectives are, but we want them to learn how they're going to be involved going forward. So I think that is a critical aspect. And I think it's something that is going to be a sea change for the way healthcare operates, you know, in the next 20 years.
I'm going to stick with Denny. You know, Denny, go ahead first.
Building on that, Denny, there was a sense of transition that I felt over the couple or 3 months with the series of webinars. And it you know, when we started out with the big issues, it was a business discussion. As we got down towards the small providers and the small payer discussion, the discussion changed to some degree, and I think it relates to what you said, Rob, with respect to the patient APIs and the patient access to the data. And that is, it's amazing to me in healthcare that we are all patients of this system. But it used to be when we arrived at the company door, we took off our patient hat and put on our business hat. I have shareholders to serve, or I have a job to do within my employer. But when this discussion about turnaround time on prior authorization, 72 hours and 7 days, and the question that was most interesting to me was, is it doable? Can we turn it around in that short period of time? But then the discussion always went to is, why does it take so long? You would almost want the prior authorization to take place in the doctor's office. Now, we all know we can get caught up in the technology of that. But if we put on our patient hat, what does the patient want? Mm-hmm. And we got a long ways to go. This final rule isn't going to solve all of that, but it's a huge step forward. And the patient, which is every single one of us, needs to be at the forefront of every decision that we make.
Definitely. I want to circle back to Denny, since with his work at MHDC, he's closer to this than the rest of us are. What have you seen over the past several months and even beyond that, even beforehand, from the payers, the providers, you know, all the rest of the stakeholders in terms of their preparedness, their thoughts? What have you seen, you know, from your communication with several different folks in the healthcare spectrum?
Well, thank you, Michael. I've seen at a general level, I think people are they're excited about this rule, especially with respect to prior auth. They're excited because the burden of prior authorization is most certainly experienced by the provider, the physician or the clinical provider who is responsible for securing that prior authorization for the services they need to perform with the patient. The second person is the patient themselves who feels that when they find out that a pharmaceutical that they've been prescribed, when they go to the pharmacist tells them, you have to get prior auth for this. This is some, there's a general sense in the community that this is a really good thing. And as Farrah said, some people want it to happen faster. Some people wonder if it can happen as fast as it's already been required. But there is excitement. I think what I see among segments of the health economy, providers are waiting for their electronic health records to be certified by ONC to support prior authorization automation. Now that's a key piece for providers. Providers don't have multiple systems of record. They don't have, you know, a lot of back-end systems in their organizations that need to be brought, you know, closer to the front of the enterprise. They have one real system of record, which is their electronic health record. And their vendors are the ones who are on the hook for making sure those EHRs are interoperable. They're accessible via an application programming interface and are able to work effectively vis-a-vis a health plan. The health plans, on the other hand, are looking at, and we see this in our community, I'm sure you know other members of this panel have seen it in theirs, they have already started working on this. They're looking at multiple ways to automate prior auth with multiple different approaches because they don't know who's going to emerge victorious at the end of this process, what vendors will be best for them. So they're taking a portfolio approach, saying we want to work with a vendor A for some part of our prior authorization portfolio. We want to work with vendor B for another part so that we can see, compare and contrast how well they do. But they're definitely starting to work on. The last thing I would say about health plans is they are seriously weighing how to bring their commercial lines of business into the prior authorization under the prior authorization umbrella, because the CMS rule does not address non-government plans. It's focused on Medicare, Medicaid, the child health insurance program, et cetera, but it's not focused on commercial plans and commercial products. So we're hearing the health plans talking about how do we make this work for everything without being excessively complex and excessively expensive? How do we time it so that we're able not to have to create more of a long project than we already have in front of us? But they're also working, you know, at doing something that no one has done before. And they're listening to Weedy. They're listening to organizations like Weedy that are bringing these kinds of this kind of information to the forefront, because they haven't done this before. This is an entirely different way of interacting with their partners and their members than they've ever had to do before. And while they're excited at the level of engagement this will produce among their members, improved relationships with their physician community because of the reduction in burden, they know that they don't know how to solve this entirely and need to listen to a lot of other people around the table to figure out how this is going to work. And I think that's where this series and other presentations and events that Weedy has held has been really valuable, is everybody is learning. There is no roadmap for doing this successfully that has already been, you know, tried and true. We're all carving our way through this in real time, and we don't exactly know how it's going to pan out when the time is up. So I think that's what I'm here.
Excellent. Now, that was 7 virtual events over 4 months to start all of it off. Over 1,000 attendees. Rob, what's next? You know, what's next in terms of, you know, the role of Weedy as a convener, as a bringing multiple parties together to, you know, find guidance, recommendations, and kind of light that path for the rest of the state, the rest of the industry?
Well, as robust as this 7-part series was, I look at it as just the beginning. As Denny said, you know, there's no one easy path forward. Everybody's going to have to learn from each other. And I think the one thing that Weedy is known for is its ability to convene. We have to bring folks together. You can't do these things in silos. And I think the one thing that is evident is everybody wants to watch somebody else go first, because there's a lot you can learn from them, and you don't want to make the same mistakes. And so, again, part of our goal over the next 2 to 3 years will be to spotlight those folks that are going first, that have some track records, that are willing to share their experience, but also have a forum where folks can ask questions, tactical questions, business questions, and feel like they're not going to be criticized. You've got to have a safe space where folks can come in and say, listen, I don't know what I'm going to do here. What do folks think? And so that will be our role. And our education is going to be nonstop. We'll include discussions of the final rule probably for the next 2, 3, 4 years, as well as individual spotlight events.
Yep. Definitely. And convene we have, and convene we will. Once again, folks, if you want to check out the entire Road to Interoperability in PA series, visit our YouTube page. Simply search Workgroup for Electronic Data Interchange on YouTube, and all 7 virtual spotlights will be there. Additionally, we have MHDC's NEHIN 3.0. Denny's folks, on early May, check out our calendar on weedy.org. Our spring conference, middle of May, May 13th through the 16th, exclusively on Zoom. We will have additional prior authorization sessions, including a nice listening session from Alex Muggy from CMS. Summer, Chicago, and hybrid, August 6th through the 7th, our summer forum, where we'll be doing some additional deep dives on prior authorization. And to close out the year, our national conference in October in Washington, D.C., I promise you that we will also have some prior authorization topics. I think we'll, like Rob said, for the next 3 to 4 years, I'll be a very busy man. Not sure if I'll be doing too many more of these podcasts. I'll be too busy. But Rob, Denny, Ferris, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. Thank you for coming on and sharing your thoughts on that ambitious, fun, and fully engaged in educational 7-part series that we just finished last week. Once again, Robert Tennant, Vice President of Federal Affairs with Weedy, Ferris Taylor, Executive Director of the Healthcare Executive Group, and Denny Brennan, Executive Director of Massachusetts Health Data Consortium. This has been the Collective Voice of Health IT, a Weedy podcast, where the healthcare IT community connects, collaborates, and creates solutions for a better health system. Find all our episodes as well as information on our association, including our events, at our website, wedi.org. Thank you for joining us, and be safe.